Ajaspa Bhajaniyangrim Abhavaya Bhavachidam Yuktam Virahitam Shaktya Gunamayatma Mayaya. Engage yourself fully, therefore, in the devotional service of the Lord. For only He can deliver us from this entanglement of material existence. Although the Lord is attached to His material potency, He is aloof from her activities. Everything in this material world is happening by the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In continuation of the previous verse, it is specifically mentioned here that Dhruva Maharaj should engage himself in devotional service. Devotional service cannot be rendered to the impersonal Brahman feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whenever the word bhajasva appears, meaning engage yourself in devotional service, there must be the servant, service, and the served. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is served. The mode of activities to please Him is called service, and one who renders such service is called the servant. Another significant feature in this verse is that only the Lord and no one else is to be served. That is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Mamekam sharanam braja. There is no need to serve the demigods, who are just like the hands and legs of the Supreme Lord. When the Supreme Lord is served, the hands and legs of the Supreme Lord are automatically served. Therefore, there is no need of separate service. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham aham samudharta mrityu samsara sagarat. This means that the Lord, in order to show specific favor to the devotee, directs the devotee from within in such a way that ultimately he is delivered from the entanglement of material existence. No one but the Supreme Lord can help the living entity be delivered from the entanglements of this material world. The material energy is a manifestation of one of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's varieties of potencies. Parasya shaktir vivadai vashuyate. This material energy is one of the Lord's potencies, as much as heat and light are potencies of fire. The material energy is not indifferent from the Supreme Godhead, but at the same time He has nothing to do with the material energy. The living entity, who is of the marginal energy, is entrapped by the material energy on the basis of his desire to lord it over the material world. The Lord is aloof from this. But when the same living entity engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord, then he becomes attached to this service. This situation is called yuktam. For the devotees, the Lord is present even in the material energy. This is the inconceivable potency of the Lord. Material energy acts in the three modes of material qualities, which produce the action and reaction of material existence. Those who are not devotees become involved in such activities. Whereas devotees who are dovetailed with the Supreme Personality of Godhead are freed from such action and reaction of the material energy. The Lord is therefore described herewith as Bhava Chidam, one who can give deliverance from the entanglement of material existence. Today we are reading from the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 12, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead, text number 6. Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods of the higher planets. Such a influential position with such great wealth. Herein he is speaking by his own observation and realization that there is really nothing worth living for except devotional service. He is explaining in these verses the nature of material existence, how entangling it is, the entanglements of material miseries keep us bound birth after birth after birth. The small pleasures that we somehow or other endure in this world keep us endlessly attached to the sources of misery. Actually, anyone and everyone, by surrendering to Krishna, can get out of this material existence. Why people do not surrender? We are like fish out of the ocean of devotion, laying on the dry sand of material existence. Flapping in pain. And we're asked, come back. Enter again into the eternal transcendental lila of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. As the child of God, you have inherited all the pleasures of the spiritual world. Come back. Why doesn't everyone come back? What to speak of the universe, even this city of Bombay. Over 12 million people. How many people are coming to our temple? Maybe 1,500 or 2,000 on Sundays. And we think it's so crowded. So many people. But if there's 2,000 people here, and maybe 5,000 people at Radharas Bihari Temple in Juhu, that's 7,000. That leaves 11,999,000 practically people are still doing so many other activities. They will not come to chant Hare Krishna. They continue karmic activities that further entangle them in the sources of misery. Why won't they come? And there's so much suffering. everyone is seeing their loved ones dying. They're subjected to so many diseases. Some are in poverty. Others are very wealthy, but they have so many terrible anxieties and frustrations in life. But they will not surrender to Krishna because there's just that little bit of sense gratification that they're so much attached to. They just cannot give it up. That little bit of sense gratification, or even if there's no sense gratification, the hope for sense gratification keeps them imprisoned by the bodily conception of life. This is the great mystery of the illusory energy. The senses are so strong. The mind is looking for pleasure. But Maya keeps promising, pleasure is here, pleasure is here. And Krishna and the Vaishnavas, they are saying, no, pleasure is here. But the point is, in order to get the eternal pleasure of the soul, one has to give up sinful activities. One has to rise above the modes of material nature. So we can see how powerful Maya really is, especially in this age of Kali. Kuvera, he knows quite well. Prahlad Maharaj, he described that money is the honey. Money is very sweet for materialistic people. Why? Because money can facilitate various opportunities to manipulate and lord it over the resources of material nature. That is why people who have money often have great power. Because the more you have, the more you can manipulate, the more you could lord it over all you survey. All the things the scriptures warn us not to be involved in, money provides the opportunity to involve yourself to such extents. So Kuvara, he's handling the accounts for the demigods. Yes? And look at some, his own sons, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. Of course, this happened later, but it's a cycle. It's always happening. Here is his own sons. So much wealth, so much opulence, so much prestige. Beautiful bodily features. Everything a materialist could possibly want. It's not because they were so affluent. All these beautiful young heavenly damsels were bathing with them in the Mandakini Ganga. Without clothes. You can't get people like that to bathe naked with you if you're just an ordinary person. They were powerful. No one in this planet can get such heavenly damsels to have pastimes with them. So they were using their beauty, their strength, their knowledge, and especially their wealth, their high birth. And they were infatuated. So much infatuated that when Sripad Narada Muni came, they didn't even offer him the slightest bit of respect. Because that's the nature of material power, and prestige, and opulence, is you become infatuated. You think you're very great. You think you're the controller. You don't bow down to others with a sincere heart. Janmaishwarya Shruti Shribir Edamanamata Apuman. Kunti Devi prayed in this way. that these material opulences, they are great obstacles on the path of devotional service because they make one proud. What happens when you're proud? Your heart becomes hard. That hard-heartedness prevents you from feeling compassion for others. How is that? Because you're so selfishly oriented. Janasya mohoya mahama meti. You're so much thinking in terms of I and mine that you can't really empathize with the sufferings of others. And if you do, it's superficial. A Vaishnav actually really feels the suffering of others because of a soft heart. But when there's false pride, we're thinking in terms of our own selfish ego. And any so-called compassion is superficial. It has no real substance. And one compares oneself to others by material standards. I am learned, I am wealthy, I am from very high family. I have all these associates who are saying such nice things about me. We cannot respect and honor others. We find it's a continuous theme within our shastras about great demigods or great kings who have so much affluence, and due to their pride, they make aparads to great sages and rishis who appear to have nothing. Like Vidyadhara Sudarshan. He laughed at one rishi because he thought he had ugly features, because he was beautiful. And the reaction is he had to become a serpent. So many aparads come due to false pride. The Christian Bible, St. Paul, he has warned us, pride cometh before the fall. Where we see excessive pride, we can understand that very soon there will be a fall. Unless we can somehow or other overcome that pride through humility and respect for others. So Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, they disrespected. If they were simple, common people, they would have certainly bowed down to Narada Muni. But they were thinking themselves superior to him because they were infatuated. And then there is Sankasura. He was also associate of Kuvera. Sankasura, he had that big, big, beautiful jewel on his head. That was Kuvera's jewel. So he had such great opulence. Thus he competed with Krishna. He was thinking that these beautiful ladies from the Raivataka forest, I'm sorry, this was Vrindavan. This was in Vrindavan. These beautiful gopis, they are for my satisfaction. Why should Krishna enjoy them? An ordinary common person could never think like that. He didn't consider what the gopis wanted. He didn't consider what Krishna wanted. He only considered I and mine. I am great, and anything I want to enjoy should be mine. So he committed terrible aparad. Chased gopis into the forest. And ultimately Krishna smashed him in the head with his fist. Ended his life. So these are just two of the famous associates of Kuvera, who became very much entangled in the egoistic pursuit of material opulence. Here Kuvera himself is giving his opinion that this whole material existence, all forms of wealth, knowledge, strength, beauty, renunciation, all the opulences are sources of entanglement and bondage, which is the root cause of all suffering. Therefore, you should perform devotional service. It is the only solution for the problems. It is the only truth, the only reality. Very interesting. Because Kuvera is seeing how entangling attachment to material nature can create. He's also watching the demigods, all the mistakes of Indra due to his great wealth and prestige. So why doesn't he teach monism? Because monism means to negate all these things. Devotional service means to acknowledge the wealth and the facilities of this world. Whereas impersonal philosophers, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya, that this world is an illusion. It really doesn't exist. The only truth is the all-pervading, impersonal existence of Brahman. And generally, because people are so utterly frustrated by the actions and reactions of karma within this material creation, they understand that accumulation of wealth is abominable. The pleasures of sex life is abominable. The pleasures of every type of sense gratification that the entire creation provides is abominable. And this body is the source of so much suffering mentally and physically, it is abominable. Therefore, we want to negate everything. We want to negate the world. We want to negate our own individual existence. That is impersonalism. It is actually born of frustration. So much suffering. Let me just end it once and for all. Our acharya is called impersonal realization to be likened to spiritual suicide. When people are utterly frustrated with their material bodies in this world, they sometimes commit suicide. Because they just can't cope with life. They don't want to be any part of it. Nothing anymore gives any charm to them. Their mind is reeling in so much pain that no matter what you give them or provide for them, there's just so much frustration and pain, they can't even see any hope for any real satisfaction. That's the point a person has to come to before they commit suicide. They become hopeless that I can ever find any stability or security or satisfaction in this world. So philosophically, the Mayavadis, they understand that actually all the entanglements of material existence cause suffering. And everything that exists, their philosophy is, will entangle you. All matter is illusion. And if you attach yourself to any form of illusion, you fall into illusion. What you associate with, you become like. The chair is an illusion. If you become attached to the chair, you become infatuated with an illusion. What to speak of wealth and jewelry and honor and prestige and beautiful families. Therefore, you have to cut yourself off. Shankaracharya, he taught that if you really want to study his philosophy, first thing you have to do is take sannyas. Cut yourself off from all sorts of material pleasures. And just live with the very minimum sustenance of the body. They become philosophically so convinced that this world is such an utterly hopeless place that they want to commit suicide. They want to just end their individual existence and end all connections to this material creation. But Kuvera is not propounding such monism. He's propounding bhakti, bhajasva, devotional service. Because he understands that what is the real utility of material creation. And he's giving the example of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's relationship with material nature to show us how we should relate to material nature. He is describing here that although the Lord is attached to his material potency, he is aloof from her activities. The material potency is the Lord's energy, parasya shaktiya vibhadaiva shruyate. The Lord has multifarious energies. And the personality who is the goddess controlling the entire material energy is Durga or Parvati. And who is Parvati? She's an expansion of Srimati Radharani or Lakshmi Devi. For the purpose of material creation, the goddess of devotion enters into material existence. If you remember when we visited Simantadweep, there is that nice story when Lord Shiva was in great ecstasy chanting the names of Lord Gauranga, and Parvati asked, "What is this that you are? I never saw you like this. I've seen you dancing at the time of devastation, and I've seen you dancing in so many various types of kirtans, but I've never seen you dancing in such ecstasy as this. And you're chanting this Gauranga the whole time as tears are falling from your eyes like rivers. Tell me, who is this Gauranga?" He explained. Krishna appears within the age of Kali as Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu to give pure love of God to everyone through chanting Harinam. So she went to Simantadweep, and there she worshipped Gauranga, and he appeared before her. And she was lamenting that I am so unfortunate. That in all the scriptures you're telling everybody how miserable material energy is. How Maya is keeping everyone away from Krishna by keeping them duped in a stupor of sleep. Lord Chaitanya was calling everyone, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chandra Bole, Kota Nidra Jayo Maya, Pisa Chira Kole. That wake up, sleeping souls, you are sleeping in the lap of Maya, get up! Get out of that Maya. So I'm Maya. I have this thankless task. Everyone's going back to Godhead and I have to stay here and keep people in illusion. In your eternal abode where your wonderful pastimes are going on, and I have to stay here in this material world just constantly torturing people and keeping them away from you. I don't think anyone is less fortunate than me. And Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu blessed her. He said, "Actually, you are Radharani. Radharani has expanded herself in your form to perform this wonderful service for me of overseeing material creation. You may always remember me. You all may always be united with me by chanting my names. So in this way he pacified her. So yes, the Lord is attached to his pleasure potency. Even when she manifests herself as the goddess of material energy. But the Lord is completely aloof from Maya Devi's activities within this material existence. Tribir Gunamayar Bhavar. He is always transcendental to the three modes of material nature. And as the part and parcel of Krishna, the spirit soul, similarly, is meant to understand through the vision of Krishna how to live within this material existence. We are not opposed to material nature. We are opposed to trying to lord it over material nature. The difference between material consciousness and spiritual consciousness is one wants to exploit the resources of material nature, and the other wants to utilize whatever is in material nature selflessly in the service of God. This is the beauty of bhakti. That we see material nature as the property of Krishna, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. We don't see the objects of material nature as being evil. We see our own ego as being evil. And we try to purify that. And the process of purifying that is using the body, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, and all of the resources of material energy that are within our command in Krishna's service. This is how we purify our heart. We are sitting in a very nice temple. So much noise out there. They're carving stone and pulling big pieces of stone up on chains. So some people would say, tell the workers, stop working, class is going on. No one told them that, did they? Very good. Prabhupada, he would hear, when they were building the Radha Ras Bihari temple in Juhu, Bombay, there was so many saws going and stones being carved, all kinds of noise. Devotees would ask, should we stop them? Prabhupada said, no. It is kirtan of the holy name. He actually heard it as kirtan, like mridangas and karatals. Because the purpose of building the temple is to glorify Krishna. Therefore, the process of building the temple and all the noises are actually transcendental. So we're using the gifts of material existence to try to do something wonderful to serve Krishna to whatever capacity we can. It is our duty. The most glorious temple in all of North India is Radha Govinda Dev. Rupa Goswami was such a wealthy person, he and his brother Sanatan, but they renounced everything. Just like a person leaves his stool behind, passing. They left all their millions of rupees and their gold coins and their palaces and their estate and their powerful government positions. They just left it behind. in Vrindavan. They were beggars by their own free choice, sleeping under trees, eating some fried chickpeas and some rotis, just picking up discarded cloth and putting it on as clothes. By their free will, they lived like this. We remember Sanatan Goswamiji when he was in Varanasi, and he had one blanket that his brother-in-law gave him. And Mahaprabhu just somehow looked at that blanket in a certain way. And Sanatan was so sensitive, he was thinking that the Lord does not like my blanket. So he went to the ghat of Ganga and saw some mendicant with this old torn-up quilt. He was washing it. And Sanatan Goswami said, I will give you this brand new, expensive, nice blanket if you give me your torn quilt. The person said, why? Why are you harassing me in this way? He was thinking, because usually rich people make fun of poor people. Sanatan said, no, I'm very serious. So it was a good trade for both of them. And Sanatan Goswami came back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with this torn quilt. And Lord Chaitanya, first thing he asked, where is that beautiful, expensive blanket you had? He said, I could understand that you didn't like it, so I exchanged it for this quilt. And Mahaprabhu said, this is very good. What will people think? You're doing madhukari with expensive clothing on. The Lord said, now the last snare of your material entanglement has been cut. But then he went to Vrindavan and built Madan Mohan Temple. And Rupa Goswamiji built Radha Govinda Temple. Beautiful, magnificent. Why? Why do we glorify them for this? Because they did not do it for their own personal ambitions. They did it in the service of the Lord. They did it in a spirit of compassion to the fallen souls of this world. Their love for Krishna. I may live very simple, but Krishna should not be simple. The real meaning of simplicity, and from one perception, is everything's for Krishna and the minimal for me. Now for the monist, minimal for everyone. But for a devotee, why does he want to be minimal? So that everything can be for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explained, if you decorate Krishna with nice jewels, then you lose the passion to wear jewelry yourself. If you offer Krishna very, very opulent bhoga, as you make spiritual advancement, you're so happy seeing Krishna eating like this that you don't need. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, there was hundreds of preparations, large quantities of bhoga. And he saw it right in the deity room. And Mahaprabhu was so happy. He said, this is very nice. Krishna's eating so nicely. Now just give me some steamed vegetables. He didn't need anything else because he's happy seeing that Krishna's eating so much. Materialistic people, no matter how much and whatever they eat, they're never satisfied. Because that's the nature of the senses. Krishna says that passion or lust burns like fire. However much you feed it, it wants more, consumes it. Sense gratification can never satisfy our desires. It only aggravates our desires. Prahlad Maharaj explained that the king of sense gratification, sex life, the process, as far as he was concerned, it's just scratching an itch. Now everybody knows when you have an itch in your body, you're not supposed to scratch it. When you scratch it, it feels very nice. But as soon as you stop scratching it, it itches more than ever. In Bombay, we have experience. We all get bitten by all these mosquitoes. And the more you scratch it, it never goes away until you stop scratching and tolerate it. I've seen little children with rashes where their parents literally put all kinds of gloves and tie their hands up and everything so they don't scratch it. The more you scratch an itch, the more it itches. The more you try to satisfy your senses through sense gratification, the more the fire of lust grows within your heart. So therefore we can't be satisfied. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he saw Jagannath is eating nicely. Whatever little remnants is there for me is fine. So this is bhakti. By actually learning how to find pleasure in seeing Krishna enjoying, we can transcend forever our own egoistic desires to enjoy. People like to live in big, nice houses. That is all right, from one point of view. Providing you actually have the proper consciousness for using a house in the service of Krishna, then that house is not a source of entanglement or bondage. Rupa Goswami built the biggest, most beautiful house in all of North India. Even the kings didn't have such beautiful palaces as Radha Govinda Dev. But it was for Krishna. And his disciples and grand disciples who were following his footsteps, they would go to that temple. Some of them lived in that temple. They were worshiping the Lord in that temple. Completely detached, seeing how Govinda Dev is enjoying. So param drishvani vartate, experiencing the higher taste, means actually understanding the science of how to give enjoyment to Krishna through bhakti. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Even if you offer Krishna a leaf, a fruit, flower, or water with devotion, Krishna will accept it. That is bhakti. It is the spirit of our desire to serve that gives pleasure to Krishna. And if Krishna provides so much opportunity to use his world and his facilities for him, then a devotee will do. Whether Srila Prabhupada was living in the simple rooms of Radha Damodar, or whether he was flying on jet airplanes, living in beautiful temples all over the world, it was the same. It was an increase in his service. It was actually an increase in his detachment and renunciation. Because it was for Krishna. All material opulences could cause bondage. And I'll be back in 1 second and I will explain something very important to understand. You can have kirtan. Rupa Goswami describes yukta vairagyam, full renunciation, true renunciation, which is to use everything in Krishna's service. Incomplete renunciation is to reject something that could be utilized in Krishna's service. Now we see, sometimes by appearing very, very renounced, we get much prestige. People honor us as very high spiritual people. And this is an impediment. A devotee's renunciation is only for Krishna. It's not for himself. Real renunciation is to take as little possible so we can give as much to Krishna. Just like there is a story of Brahmananda Bharati. He was wearing deerskin. Yes. He came to Jagannath Puri wearing deerskin. Now, you know what? Did you ever try to wear a deerskin? I tried it before. It's actually really uncomfortable because deerskin, it's not like nice cloth dhoti and it doesn't bend when you bend. And it's really rough on the skin. I mean, what you're wearing now is really sense gratification compared to deerskins. To sit on a deerskin is nice. Even snakes don't like deerskins. That's why you sit on deerskins. But to wear them is very, very difficult. So he came in wearing deerskin. He was introduced. Brahmananda Bharati has come to see you, my lord. Lord Chaitanya didn't even look at him. Just looked another way. He said, Brahmananda Bharati's not here. He said, no, he's here, right here, standing. Don't you see him? He said, no, this is not Brahmananda. Brahmananda Bharati would never wear a deer skin. Here he is, very senior. He was senior to Lord Chaitanya. Brahmananda Bharati began to think in his mind that the Lord understands that I'm simply dressing this way so people will think I'm very renounced for my own prestige. He doesn't like that. So he took it off and just wore the regular standard sannyasi clothes that all the sannyasis would wear. He just became a regular person in that sense. He wasn't something unique, something so special, something so renounced. Then when he came in, Lord Chaitanya offered his obeisances to him. He was very happy. So he enlightened Brahmananda Bharati in this way. And he enlightened the world. Gorkishore Das Babaji, he lived such a simple life. By material standards, total poverty. But he didn't do it because he wanted people to think he was an advanced devotee. He did it simply because he wanted to just do everything for Krishna and nothing for himself. So when people started honoring him and as being such a great Siddha Baba, you know what he did? He went to one wealthy man and asked to borrow his beautiful embroidered silk dhoti and chador. And he put that on and walked through the streets of Navadvip. And everyone was thinking, oh, he's just a gross sense gratifier. He was just fooling us with this apparent poverty and renunciation, but now he's got some money through it all, and look at how he's dressing now. So he was very happy people were thinking him like that. And then after he ruined his own reputation, and he gave the dhoti back to someone else and put on his torn rags. Hari Hari. So he was not doing it for himself. Of course, he was Babaji. He was Paramhamsa. If we try to imitate Paramhamsa, we will undoubtedly fall to the lowest depths of illusion. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they train their devotees in such a way that they're simple, but no one is trying to be something unique for their own prestige, for their own popularity, for their own ego, in the name of renunciation. When Prabhupada would see devotees in rags, brahmacharis, he would chastise them. Dress like a brahmachari, don't, not all this nonsense. Be respectable, go out and preach. And devotees would do that. Why? Because it's how they could best serve. Like some of our devotees would probably like to just walk barefoot everywhere. But you're taking trains, you may take cars, you may take planes. That's a higher service. If you're doing it for preaching, that's a higher service than just what Lord Chaitanya called Markata Vairagya, renunciation of monkey. Monkeys, how do they dress? They don't wear anything. They're naked. Where do they live? They don't have houses. They live in trees. What do they eat? They don't. Well, nowadays they do madukari, but in those days they would just eat the, they would just eat the whatever grows. In those days they didn't get rotis and bananas, sweets from the shops. They would just take what was growing on the trees. Kapita fruit. Kapita fruit is kind of a bitter fruit that the monkeys like to eat. But still, they're so egoistic. You see two monkeys fighting, they show their teeth. They're usually fighting over a kapita fruit, right? Or they're fighting over some monkini. Female monkey. So what is their renunciation? Ultimately it's exposed due to their attachments. So real renunciation is not just how you look. It's what is the state of your heart. To do everything for Krishna, to utilize everything for Krishna. Of course, we have to be very, very careful in this process of yukta vairagya, because the tendency is that I'm doing it for Krishna, but actually you're doing it for yourself. With the facilities we have to serve Krishna, we want to take it for our own sense gratification. We should take whatever we need to keep our body and soul and our health proper and use everything for Krishna. That is devotional service. And this is how Kuvera is instructing Dhruva Maharaj. As treasurer of the demigods, he sees the pitfalls of material wealth, opulence, and prestige. And he's telling Dhruva, don't become entangled in it. Be attached to serving Krishna. And you could utilize everything in the service of Krishna. And what is the result? After Dhruva Maharaj is hearing Kuvera's preaching, Dhruva Maharaj goes back home. Because he goes back to Godhead. But at this particular time, he's the king. He's the king of the planet. But he's using everything for Krishna. So this is the power and the glory of devotional service that is being explained so nicely here. A devotee sees that everything within this material world is happening by the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kuvera, Atma Mayaya, Prabhupada translates it as inconceivable potency. Everything that's happening is directly or indirectly being executed by the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Inconceivable means, however well educated and philosophically astute you may be, you cannot understand why things are happening the way they are. The details are sometimes impossible to comprehend. That is the meaning of inconceivable. However, devotees have a very simple natural faith that it is all ultimately happening by the will of Krishna. And Krishna is only motivated by love. Even his wrath is an expansion of his love. Krishna is nothing but love. Even in his form of time, Kala Rupa, the Virat Rupa, Arjuna saw so many millions of people being devoured by the fiery mouths of the universal form. He said, "Time, I am devouring everything." It was a ghastly scene. Actually, the material world is a ghastly place. The power of time puts everything to an end. Everything dies. Everyone dies in this material world. And death is quite ghastly from the material perception. There's nothing nice in looking at a dead corpse. It's the lifeless body. It's in the process of decomposing. The heart, it's very difficult to accommodate death. It's very difficult to accommodate mass suffering. But in the form of time, the entire world is entering into the jaws of death. But a devotee understands that ultimately, essentially, all these potencies are coming from Krishna. Even the laws of karma and their actions and reactions, which create the whole facility of, or which are all working within the facility of time, it's ultimately all created and arranged by Krishna. We have our free will. And according to our free will, we get certain reactions within this world, but ultimately there's death for everyone. And ultimately, there's suffering for everyone. More acute for sinful people. Less for pious people. But sarva karana karanam, Krishna is the source of everything. And Krishna is, there's nothing in his heart except unlimited, pure, inconceivable spiritual love for every living entity. Not the love of this world. The love of God. Whatever love is in this world that gives us some pleasure is only a perverted reflection of one tiny little fragmental spark of God's eternal, true, pure love. So how through his inconceivable potencies, Krishna is manifesting and expressing his eternal pure love It can only be understood by simple faith. And we have a whole philosophy supporting it. But that simple faith is that Krishna is good. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. Krishna is perfect and complete, therefore everything emanating from Him is perfect and complete. But there appears to be so many imperfections in this world. But actually everything's perfect. Is that conceivable? Even as I'm giving this class, so many mistakes I'm making. What to speak of, you go outside and you see so much horrible, sinful activities. And you read the newspapers and you read about all terrorism and imminent wars and violence and cruelty and abuse. How is all emanations from Krishna perfect and complete? We may be imperfect in our perception. And in acting according to our perceptions, we may be doing so many imperfect things. But it is all within the realm of a perfect design. Therefore, ultimately, it's all part of that perfection. So this Achintya Shakti, the inconceivable potencies of the Lord, must be understood to actually have strong and firm faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless we understand what is this Achintya Shakti, that when things go in ways that are very upsetting to the mind and senses, people give up their faith in God. Why is God done like this? How could He do like this? Certain circumstances are just, we can't believe it. Why? People give up their faith in God, or they compromise their faith in God because they can't conceive of how He could be connected to the atrocities of this world. September 11th. So many people became atheists. Why would God do that to 3,000 people in the World Trade Centers of New York City? And even when I was in San Diego, the most prominent Indian community of that part of Southern California, they were assembled together, and I was asked to give a lecture, and they were challenging in these ways. They couldn't believe there could be a God after this. They had some sense of religion until this World Trade Center catastrophe. Something that cannot be explained and understood by the rational mind must be rejected. That is their idea. And if we cannot explain how God would do and why God would do, then we must reject the idea of God. Therefore, Achintya Shakti, inconceivable in so many ways. One of the inconceivable aspects of the Lord is how He works through His material nature you cannot understand. But we know one thing. It's perfect. It's motivated out of love. It's for the ultimate well-being of everyone. And therefore, whatever we perceive within the creation around us, if we have this understanding, it only increases our knowledge, increases our awareness of what is to be done and what is not to be done, and increases our faith. Yes, we have a whole philosophy describing the laws of nature, the laws of karma, but ultimately we have to accept the inconceivable potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the source of everything that exists. Even Dhruva Maharaj was quite inconceivable. He was a nice devotee. Why was he killing all these yakshas wholesale? Hari Hari. He was performing his service, but he got carried away. Why would a great Mahabhagavat, Paramhamsa Vaishnava like Dhruva get carried away? By the inconceivable will of the Lord. Because the Lord wanted Swayambhu Manu and Kuvera to come and teach the world through these beautiful verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Why Arjuna was bewildered? So that Krishna could speak Bhagavad Gita. Why the spotless, self-controlled Mahabhagavat king, Parikshit, would become angry and put a serpent on Samigrishi's neck. Inconceivable will of the Lord for a higher purpose. We cannot always see with our eyes what is the reason. But with faith, with philosophical conviction, and with proper faith, every single situation enhances our desire to love Krishna and to serve Krishna. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, talking about this aspect of Yukta Vairagya and living simply, as devotees, we do follow this, but one aspect, at least in my life, is the aspect of our prasadam that we take. Ever since I became a devotee, the type of food that I eat has been much, much more opulent than when I was a karmi. And I'm sure many devotees would agree to this aspect also. So I was just trying to figure out how to we put this aspect of Yukta Vairagya and simplicity in our prasadam habits, because you know it has been seen that since years it has been the same. You know, it has been very opulent than what I was when I was a karmi.
When you were a karmi, according to your own terminology, what were you eating? According to Gita. You were eating only sin. So now you're eating Krishna's mercy. That is the real opulence, that you're taking Krishna's mercy. Previously, you're eating only sin. Haribo. So, of course, you should eat more opulent than sin is not opulence. Even if you're eating the most succulent, ghee-saturated subjis. If it's boga, it's just sin. Yes? It's not opulence. But even one tulsi leaf from Krishna's Mahaprasad is such great opulence. What is that story in Udupi, there's that wonderful painting on the wall where Krishna was going to leave Dwarka. Yes? And I think it was Narada Muni. He was going to leave. And Satyabhama said she would give all of her jewels, the weight of Krishna, if he could be kept back.
So Krishna sat on a scale and Satyabhama put so much of her jewels and all the queens were putting so much of their jewels and Krishna weighed more than all the jewels. So it was, appeared hopeless. Krishna was going to leave. There was no matter how much wealth they put on that scale, Krishna weighed more than all of it. Because he's Lakshminath. So then they took all the jewels off and put one tulsi leaf on. And the tulsi leaf weighed more than Krishna. That is devotion. So real opulence is devotion. Real opulence is Krishna's mercy. The opulence of materialists is not real opulence at all. Kolaveta Sridhar, he was opulent. Mahaprabhu drank the water from his old beat-up iron cup just to show that even the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eager to take the remnants of his devotee, even though his devotee was in abject poverty by material consideration. The Lord said, I will reveal to the world that you have the greatest treasure. Opulence of devotion. As far as your eating of prasad, it is actually an austerity to only eat what is offered to Krishna. That is tapasya. It's a greater tapasya to eat samosas and halava that is offered to Radha Gopinath than for some yogi eating some handful of chipped rice. There's a greater tapasya. Because it's offered to Krishna. Whereas if he is not offering it to Krishna, it is simply sin. It's bhoga. It's actually sense gratification. His eating that chipped rice is sense gratification because he's doing it to maintain his body. But taking Krishna's prasad is an austerity. So if Krishna provides nice prasad, then you can take. But as far as austerity as a grihastha, as far as our own efforts, we should try to eat what is best to keep our body and mind healthy and together for Krishna's service. That is actual austerity. This path is not for one who eats too much or eats too little. We should take what's best for us so that we have energy to serve. Raghunath Das Goswami, at one time he was just eating the decomposed rice spit out by the Talinga cows at the Singhadwaram gate of Puri. And later on he was just taking a little cup of buttermilk a day. So austere. If you did that, you would die. That would not be austerity for you to do it. That would simply be maya. But that's what he, as the very embodiment of renunciation, that was his service to live this way. And he was able to fully engage his life in the loving service of the Lord. So we should try to eat simple, to keep body and soul together. But at the same time, when we come to the temple, if someone gives you prasad, then you can accept it. Most important thing is we should take prasad in such a way that we could best serve. If we take too much opulent prasad, it may agitate our mind and senses. It may make our health weak. May make us sleepy. In which case, you know, we should take the amount and the type of prasad that will best help us in our devotional service. We should not be fanatical either way. There is the story of when Prabhupada was preaching and all these austere yogis and sadhus were there, and they were all speaking all this dry philosophy. And then Prabhupada just came up with his devotees and they just had kirtan and distributed puris covered with sugar to everyone. And everyone was very happy. Even the sadhus were very happy. For them to eat these sugar-coated puris was the highest spiritual experience they ever had in their life. It's probably the most renounced they've ever been in their life, too. Because they were doing something for Krishna. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, you very nicely mentioned about Yukta Vairagya and how the temple should be used in Lord's service. Now, because of the kind of situation which is going on in India, many people are asking this question about the Ayodhya issue and what the Hare Krishna movement is trying to do to help construct this Ram temple. So what should be our stance when these kind of questions are asked? They say sometimes that you are interested only in constructing Hare Krishna temples, but this temple is supposed to be representing the hearts of all the Indians, all the Hindus.
Not just Hare Krishna temples. Hare Rama, Hare Krishna temples. We are concerned with elevating people's consciousness. We are not involved in political affairs. We are simply involved in elevating people's consciousness. Unless the temple is actually a place where pure devotional service is going to be taught, then we are not so interested just in building temples. Srila Prabhupada would build temples because it was a place where genuine devotees of parampara would be educating and inspiring people in the science of pure devotional service. That is why the Goswamis and all of our acharyas, whoever had done so, built beautiful temples. So in regard to this, we are not involved, positive or negative. We are doing our own business. If we had faith that pure unalloyed devotional service would be taught there, then we may get involved in some way or another. So we don't have to tax our brains to think whether it's the right thing or whether it's the wrong thing. Of course, devotees would love to see a beautiful temple in Ram's birthplace. But at the same time, if it means hundreds of other temples are burned to the ground, tens of millions of people killed, we are not concerned with that. We are, whatever's favorable for devotional service, that we accept. Whatever's unfavorable for devotional service, we reject. So whatever uplifts the consciousness of humanity to a sense of real dedication and surrender to God, We are not so concerned with just an egoistic Hindu sentiment or egoistic Muslim sentiment or egoistic Christian sentiment. They tore down the temple and built a mosque due to egoistic sectarian interests. If we're going to build another temple, it shouldn't be with egoistic sectarian interests. It should be actually the pure heart wanting to glorify the Supreme Lord. So therefore, if anyone asks, you simply say, we are involved, we are doing our business to try to promote pure, undivided, unalloyed devotional service through the chanting of God's names. That is our business. And all of these other things, we are not for or against. Does that answer your question? Ultimately, everyone wants to see beautiful temples of Ram or Krishna. But it should be in such a way that it elevates and creates purity and sanctity in the world. Yes.
Thank you for the wonderful class, Maharaj. Maharaj, you are explaining in the class that the demigods and all the living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. So, also we understand that when you serve the root of the tree, and we don't have to serve the demigods separately because the water is automatically given to the parts and parcels. So, and sometimes we give the example of Dhruvasmani and how Draupadi was saved when Krishna just ate a morsel of prasad when she was approached by Dhruvasmani and his disciples. Because Krishna was satisfied, so all the living entities, automatically they were satisfied. And there was no hunger in their stomach and they were satisfied. But today also we sometimes find there are so many pure devotees in serving the Lord Prasadam, and Lord Krishna is satisfied and accepting the offering. But still, as all the living entities being parts and parcels, still there is so much suffering, there is hunger and so much of anxiety and hunger and poverty. Although Krishna is accepting and satisfied with the offering of devotee duties. So how do we understand these things in terms of the analogy when we give to the people?
Did Krishna ever personally come and take the food from your pot? When Krishna personally appears to perform his lila, he demonstrates very extraordinary pastimes. No doubt, every day we're offering, thousands of temples all over the world are offering 6 times a day bhoga to Krishna. And Krishna will accept that, and certainly it is for the welfare of all the universe. But when Krishna is personally present on the planet performing his lila, he does extraordinary things. Just by eating that one shred of bhoga on the bottom of that pot, the whole universe was filled to the brim with nice prasad. Hare Krishna. Well, that is a special miracle that Krishna exhibited during his lila in this world. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would glance at people and they would fall down in ecstasy. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in our temple. He's glancing at everybody. So when he personally comes in his direct pastimes, he does these wonderful, wonderful feats. But ordinarily, he comes and through the process of seeing the deity, through the process of offering prasad, we gradually become purified. And ultimately we come to the same state. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.